Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, many years in Asia, for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, turning on the 80th gathering of the United Nations and the presentation by the President of the United States to the General Assembly gathered in New York. The headlines from the Telegraph tell an unusual story for a General Assembly speech. Trump tells UN, your countries are going to Hades over migration. Subhead, it's time to end the failed experiment of open borders, U.S. President tells General Assembly. The audience sat quiet. No applause, no cheering, nobody walking out. The president went on to lay out very carefully in what the Telegraph characterizes as a speech much interrupted by extemporaneous remarks by the president. His style perfectly. Clearly he was comfortable. He went through the 15-minute limit. What 15 minutes? That was just clearing his throat. I feel very happy to be up here with you, nevertheless, the U.S. president said. And that way you speak more from the heart. And he spoke from the heart. Immigration, Mary, I do not believe the American audience is properly educated about what's happened to Europe since they last characterized it as the land we left behind. Germany is profoundly threatened by a party called AfD that says no immigration, migrants out, no EU, EU out, no NATO, NATO out. France has the national rally, which goes in populist directions, but certainly no migration, no immigrants, and the ones we have leave. Britain doesn't summarize that way. It just struggles with large demonstrations in the street and the prime minister denying the obvious that it is overwhelmed right now by a population that is crossing the dangerous English Channel and Britain can't stop it. I could go on. There are other states, Denmark, Italy, Spain, all burdened by the same migration from the global south. The president told them something they knew, and yet they're going to reject it. What do we learn from this, Mary, about Europe and about the EU and OECD and NATO's sense of themselves as superior, but in fact their conduct is that of self-destruction? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening to you, John. Well, the United Nations has strayed a long way from its founding 80 years ago. If you go look at the preamble of the document, of the charter, it says that, you know, we, the peoples of the UN, determined to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, and to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights and the dignity and worth of the human person. And that was the goal of the creation of the United Nations. What it turned into was an institution wholly captured, mostly captured, because, of course, the United States still plays a major role in the United Nations as its largest contributor. It turned into a forum for authoritarian states and unfree states to voice their grievances and to use the platform as a convenient place to try to embarrass U.S. presidents and their host country, the United States. It took on causes that had nothing to do with fundamental human rights, you know, making up new rights that, are not unalienable rights. It took up the mantle of climate change and left-wing activism, and it became a key area for the Chinese Communist Party to pursue its own agenda. So, you know, I think that context is important. When President Trump gets up at that podium and starts to lecture European nations on policies that he thinks are mistaken, he's basically just doing to them what they've tried to do to us for many, many years, which is to tell them what to do. And by the way, he's right. As you so ably laid out, Many European nations, be it, you know, after the fall of the Soviet Union or in the aftermath of the Syrian civil war or the unrest in Libya, have seen successive waves of illegal immigration, and they have struggled not just to integrate the immigrants that they want, but to prevent the immigrants that they don't want from swamping their shores and their welfare systems, et cetera. It's created a lot of crime. And some, you know, actually terrible crimes in places like Sweden, for instance, and Germany. We read reports of that all the time. And I think President Trump now feels very comfortable in the office that he has. He was president before. He's been to many of these general assemblies. He knows the drill. As you said, he feels very comfortable blowing past the time limit, as he should, as the leader of the free world. And I just, you know, think a lot of this upset at his remarks is because he's telling the truth, and he's doing it at a venue that these nations are not used to seeing being used by a U.S. president.
What is it that Europe stands for these days, Mary? Have you heard a definition that makes sense to you? You've traveled there more recently than I have. Do they have a sense of themselves?
I think Europe is an amorphous term that's really ill-suited to the discussion, because the nations of Europe are so distinct as you move through the geographies. You know, the so-called E3, I know the UK is not part of the European Union anymore, but just for illustration's sake, you know, Britain, France, and Germany, highly developed economies, sophisticated in terms of their manufacturing, their service sectors, et cetera. Very, very different from, say, Central Europe or Eastern Europe or the Baltic states or Scandinavia. And they all have, you know, different strengths and weaknesses. I think what is interesting about the direction of these nations is that the populism that swept through Britain with Brexit in 2015 has been reanimated, I think, by the election of President Trump. And you see the parties on the far right-hand side of the political spectrum in Germany and France and the UK outpolling every other party. And Giorgia Meloni, who's running Italy right now with her party, firmly sits in that camp. So there's a lot of political dissatisfaction in the countries I named, Britain, France, and Germany, even Spain, where the Vox party is also gaining in popularity. And I think these parties are looking to the United States and the Trump administration to see if there's a blueprint there for them. It's an open question as to whether or not that's true. But certainly, I think, you know, President Trump may be speaking to an unfriendly audience at the UN General Assembly. But a lot of what he's saying is resonating with the peoples of Europe, who are, as they are asked and being polled, are saying, no, we don't like the parties in power, and we much prefer something closer to what the United States has.
The president. Today, just 8 months into my administration, we are the hottest country anywhere in the world, and there is no other country even close. That statement is seen by the author at the Telegraph as a carnival barker. It happens to be dead on earnest, according to the OECD estimates of growth this year and next year. The only country that approaches our growth is Britain. We grow, we prosper, and we grow again. Europe does not have the magic. Why not, Mary? Where did it go?
Well, Europe spent more in terms of government spending as a percentage of GDP than we did. Europe taxed more. Europe regulated more. And Europe choked its energy industry, which, of course, is the in many cases, the cause of inflation in the country and persistently high input costs for every industry over there. So it's hard to point to an area where they did anything better than we did. In fact, they did nothing better than we did. That's why we're the world's leaders in technology and the development of you know, various sorts of services and healthcare breakthroughs and biotech and, you know, even, you know, old line industries like some of the ones I'm involved in, right? Freight or, you know, supply chain, materials distribution. You know, we're integrating AI and leaps and bounds ahead of European counterparts. It's just a more of a risk-taking environment here in the United States and we benefit as a result. It is, of course, a harsher environment, right? We have, an ethos here that if you go bankrupt, well, that happens, and you got to pick yourself up and get going again. And it's a much more protected culture over there that, we don't want you to suffer the slings and arrows of life. We just want you to have kind of an average life and be protected and be happy with it. And I, what I think is so interesting about the European reaction to the second Trump administration is that there's no self-reflection of what they might learn or why it is that these polls are showing that these parties on the right are more popular. There's no political tactile movement there. It's just they sort of plow ahead as if, they deserve to maintain power. And I just think there are going to be a lot of surprises in coming elections in continental Europe.
In addition to the president's sentiments, I have some statistics that are useful. Artificial intelligence data centers. There are more than 500 in Europe. There are less than 500 in China. Right now, the U.S., 5,000. Now, 63% of them built since 2015. And Europe wants to know how to do it. Mary, they don't not only take risk, they run from risk. That's the only conclusion you have. How can an educated person not see that artificial intelligence is here to make us better lives? How can they not? 5,000.
Because they're anti-oil and gas. Because they do not have the energy production capability to power the data centers. Now, granted, John, not all of this construction may be economically viable, right? We may be overbuilding here in the United States, but at least we're building, and at least we have the energy to power the centers. I think at some point, the desperation of the populace, take the UK, for example, will become so acute that they will turn to another alternative. They'll get rid of the fracking ban, or they'll do carve outs to it because they can't subsist on these high energy prices and they can't fulfill their promises of becoming an AI center without doing that. We'll see, but there is a breaking point here in democracies, and I just think that they're approaching it pretty soon over there.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State. She traveled with Mike Pompeo, former Asian correspondent at the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. We're headed to the NATO frontier. There's trouble. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.